The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to You Aren't a West Ham podcast from The Athletic. I'm Sam Delaney. I'm joined as always by Rashane Thomas, The Athletic's West Ham correspondent. We are still buzzing. It is Tuesday morning. We've had 2 days to reflect, 2 days to try and calm ourselves. I feel just as excitable as I did all of Sunday afternoon, to be honest. What a spectacular result against local rivals, the club that most West Ham fans hate beyond all others. And not just any old result against Tottenham, but a result against Tottenham that puts us looking pretty healthy in the Champions League places as we reach the end of February. What in the hell is going on? What a day at the London Stadium on Sunday. And Rashane Thomas, you were one of the lucky few to have actually been there. What was that like?
And Mikel Antonio from close range tucks it home.
I'm forever blowing bubbles. still on Cloud 9, sir. Still on Cloud 9. Listen, it was absolutely amazing. But the last 10 minutes, I was so nervous.
Yeah.
The last 10 minutes of that match. Because the thing is, right, when you're in a press box, you have to be professional. Like, we all have clubs we support, but you have to be professional in the press box.
Yeah.
In the last 10 minutes, like, I remember there was one incident where Suchek did a shoulder barge. I forgot who it was on. And the linesman gave it as a foul. I was like, linesman, what on earth are you doing? Yeah. And everyone around me started laughing, but I lost all composure. I lost all composure.
Yeah. All composure. I mean, luckily, as I understand it, they're in the press pack. You're not the only hammer in the press pack, so it must be sort of all right. There must be some other fellow hammers getting a little bit tense and sweaty palmed towards the end of that game, right?
Well, to be fair, most of them are Tottenham fans.
Seriously?
Yeah, most of them are Tottenham fans. So.
Oh, God, it would turn ugly if I was in the press box. You don't want to be surrounded by Spurs fans, although it must have felt lovely at the end. Mate, I've got to tell you, I was so stressed out in that game. Not just at the end when they were pressing us so hard, right? But to be honest, through the game, because the stakes were so high, and as if I wasn't stressed enough already, just like moments, seconds before the kickoff, a mate of mine on the WhatsApp group that I share with a bunch of other West Ham fans wrote to us all, there is an argument that this is the biggest game that West Ham have played in the last 20 years, or something like that, right? And I thought, oh, he's being silly. But then I sort of started to contemplate it. And I thought, well, in a way it is. I mean, you know, there's been playoff games that I suppose you could argue would be more crucial. But to be this high in the table, this late in the season, and to be looking to secure that further with a game against a clearly vulnerable and weakened Tottenham Hotspur at our own ground, there is so much pressure in that. And the fact that we were bookies' favourites going into it for the first time in practically 20 years against Tottenham Hotspur, it piled on a lot of pressure that I was unused to. I kind of realised that you're just so conditioned to be an underdog as a West Ham fan, and you get used to it. And there's something comfortable in it because you think, well, the worst that can happen is that we lose, and that's what everyone expects from us anyway. So Same old West Ham, doesn't really matter. We crack on, that's life. When you're going into a game thinking, we really ought to win this, we can win it, and what's more, we should win it, then the pressure is so high. I was bloody exhausted by the end of the match, mate. I don't know how you wrote your report.
That's a story as well, because obviously at the Athletic, we try and be a bit different in our match reports. So afterwards, I spoke to my boss, Alex Kajalski. We were like, yeah, you know, it's great West Ham are fourth, 2 points ahead of Chelsea. It's great about, you know, Moyes beat Jose Mourinho. But, like, how can we be different from everyone else? Because that's what everyone else be, like, writing about afterwards. So I was like, you know what? It was a lovely moment in the second half where Lingard scored. And I saw Fornals and Declan Rice run over to celebrate. And I didn't see that last season. The only person who was doing sort of, like, unique celebrations were, like, Antonio. That's pretty much it. And obviously the nice moment when Declan Rice scored against Watford around to technical area to embrace David Moyes. But apart from that, I didn't really see any sort of synchronised celebrations. So I was like, let's just do that because no one's going to be talking about it. And it's such a nice moment. And again, It just you know, shows the togetherness, the camaraderie, the fact that they can make fun out of themselves and feel no way about it. I thought it was a nice moment. So yeah, that's how we came up with the match report at the end.
It was really nice, actually. It was a really, I mean, yeah, I'm not mad keen on the choreographed goal celebrations, but you know, whatever rings their bells, I suppose. But yeah, I suppose it does. It is a great nod towards the camaraderie and the unity in that squad that I can only assume has come about as a result of David Moyes' influence, because a lot of the players are the same as they were before. I mean, there are some new faces like Lingard and the Czech boys, but, you know, the majority of the squad is the same as it was last year when it looked like we were really struggling for team spirit. Do you think team spirit is almost the most important thing that's got us to where we are at this point in the season?
I really do. I'm not sure if you listened to the interview, but Declan and I spoke well on a talk sport yesterday about how the mentality has changed, the banter on a daily basis, the love the players have for each other, and how, you know, beforehand they sort of practiced that celebration and it was Fornals' idea, you know, stuff like that. Like, I see a team that's not like 11 individuals. I see a team that's like willing to fight for each other, you know, just fight for the cause. Last season, you could argue, obviously before Moyes was appointed manager, that, you know, you got Felipe Anderson, you got Hala, you got players that, it just felt like there's too many individuals on the starting 11. But now you've got players coming off the bench having an impact. Players like Issa Diop coming in for the cold, scoring goals and doing well. Like, I see a brotherhood. Like, I really do. Mm. And I mentioned in the piece where, like, my favourite memory from the 2010 World Cup was Ghana scoring goals. And the reason why it is, they'll always celebrate. Like, I would look forward to watching Ghana score a goal just so I could see a celebration. And we're seeing that now at West Ham, you know, the love we have for one another. So all in all, it's just beautiful to see. And you mentioned David Moyes. I actually think a big reason for that more recently, Jesse Lingard. His personality is definitely rubbing off on the players. I'm not sure if you've seen it, but he posted a video on his Instagram story just laughing for 4 hours. he was mocking his dance with the flute. And it's just beautiful to see. Like, it really was. So I think Lingard's a big factor behind that as well.
Because Lingard, if we qualify for the Champions League, people will look back and say, well, West Ham were heading for a decent finish. But the introduction of Lingard gave them that extra little edge that pushed them into the top four. Because that's what he's doing at the moment. I mean, he's been the difference in a couple of close games, hasn't he? Including Tottenham. I wouldn't say he was man of the match against Spurs because everyone played fantastically. But I would say that the way in which he scored the second goal was just classic Lingard. He pounced on a mistake and he just sort of basically barreled his way through at goal as if nothing would stop him or get in his way. He just insisted, it's like that thing when you look at a player and it's almost like he's made a decision to score. Right, I'm going to score now. Out the way. Here we go. That's what he did, didn't he?
For sure. And you know what, Sam? I'm going to say we're visionaries, you know? Because do you remember, I think it was maybe like 3 podcasts ago, we were like, we're talking about Pepe Cisse and the impact he had at Newcastle towards the second half of the season. And we were like, listen, Lingard could be our Pepe Cisse. You never know. And I remember, like, for that podcast, you put out a tweet saying Lingard will be our Pepe Cisse. And now look, he's scored 3 goals already in a month. Talk about him potentially forcing his way into the England squad. And he's having a similar impact. He really is. And you know what? I don't even think West Ham should wait until the end of the season. Sign Lingard now. Don't even wait. His value will only increase. Man United put like an extra 50 mil on his valuation. Sign Lingard right now. He's loving it. He's formed a great bond with Declan Rice and Mark Noble. Like, he's really enjoying it right now. And
I've got to say, whatever United are asking for him is going to be worth it. That sounds mad. There's obviously going to be a limit. But if you look in the Premier League at the moment, not just West Ham, but the Premier League as a whole, he has got to be in the top 3 or 4 performing players right now. It's just fantastic, isn't it? Because I think we've got more players like that now. I think Antonio's like that. I think Suchet's like that too. And I hope that Bowen and Benrahma will respond to having those kind of players around them and Fornals and raise their level. I think it'll be good for those lads.
I definitely agree. And listen, I'm not saying Benrahma's like Cristiano Ronaldo, but I remember when Ronaldo was first at Man United and you do all these stepovers, all these tricks. And I reached a point where I was like, you know what, less is more. Like, you're talented, but less is more. And I feel like that's what Moyes trying to coach into Benrahma right now. You can do all the tricks, but to do it at the right time. And I feel, obviously, he's made great progress, but I feel in time he will come good. And with Lingard, he's just such a likable person. He's such a likable person. And there's players at rival teams because they're so likable, I want them to do well. So I can think of someone like Ollie Watkins, because he's such a likable guy. You want him to do well for Aston Villa. Or just do well in general. And I feel like, you know, fans of other teams looking at Lingard, I thought I'd be like, he's such a good player. I want to do well at West Ham. I was speaking to one of my mates the other day. He's an Arsenal fan. And he's watching West Ham games because of Lingard.
Really?
But yeah, you're watching West Ham games because of Lingard. He likes Lingard. He wants him to do well. Yeah. And it's great to have someone like that in a team. Someone that, you know, the players gravitate towards. The player, he's going to do funny celebrations. I remember after the match, of the recent match against Tottenham, he posted a video and he tried to do a Cockney accent. And I started laughing because it's like, that's just typical Lingard right there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's really good to see.
I think there was a sense when he first signed, some people who, you know, I mean, and I'm one of them. I watched him play for England in the World Cup. That was my main knowledge of him. That was the main time I'd seen him play. And I thought he was pretty good. You know, he was all right. In a good England team. I wouldn't say he was one of the best players in that England team, but everyone played well that summer on the whole. But then I knew, you know, the other thing I thought about Lingard was I just remember him being on that coach that the West Ham fans attacked on the last game at Upton Park, and him lying on the floor laughing, giggling and shouting, "Mummy," right? Which I did respect him because I thought it was funny, right? But he had this reputation, didn't he, based on his social media image and the whole thing of calling himself J-Lings, and people thought, nah, maybe he's a bit of a prat. Maybe he's just one of these guys who's more interested in the celebrity lifestyle than he is in being a pro. But it just goes to show you, you've got to be careful how you judge people. You know, that's the sort of spirit of this team as well. They're a good young bunch of lads who obviously are a laugh. They enjoy each other's company. They, you know, they've got a sense of humour. And that's lovely for fans to see. But boy, they've got this professionalism too. What I'm saying is, mate, you don't have to be like Alan Shearer in order to play like Alan Shearer.
Yeah.
But they've obviously got the balance right. And I tell you what else, just another thing, we heap praise on Moyes every single week. But I think that as a manager, as a leader, it takes actually quite a lot of strength of character to have that many senior lieutenants around you, because a lot of people, especially in a job like football management, where you know it's so insecure, so perilous, you could be replaced at any moment, you know. And very often we've seen assistants take over from managers in situations like that. There's a temptation with some senior people, if they're a bit insecure about their position, to not want too many senior men with big characters and huge experience working around them and underneath them, because they feel threatened by that, right? Yeah. And I think it reflects really well on David Moyes that he's got enough self-belief and self-confidence to say, okay, I've got all these guys. I mean, Stuart Pearce is, obviously we know about his experience as a player, but also, you know, the bloke's managed Manchester City. He's managed England.
Yeah.
You know, and you sort of think, to have him as just one of my coaches, you know, and have Alan Irving, who of course mainly has worked alongside Moyes in recent years, but, you know, he had his spell at West Brom as the main man. Kevin Nolan has had his spell as the main man at a couple of clubs. You know, he doesn't care, Moyes. He's got the confidence to surround himself with an elite sort of gang. You know, you see politicians, you see prime ministers, you know, who fill their cabinet with yes men. We're basically idiots who will just go along with anything. They're just happy to be there. It's true. You see it all the time. You know, it's just like, you see, well, I don't want people challenging what I think because I want to make all the decisions. So I just want a bunch of hangers-on who are happy to just be there, nodding their heads, saying yes, right? And they're just happy because they get the money and they get the fancy job title, right? That's not David Moyes, because every one of those blokes that you're talking about will be the sort to challenge David Moyes on a daily basis, you know? And I think it takes a lot of strength as a man to be able to sort of, you know, invite that kind of critique every day.
Yeah. You know what? When I think about Moyes' like backroom staff, I think of the word loyalty. Paul Neville was loyal to Chris Hughton during his managerial career. Kevin Nolan was like loyal to Sam Allardyce. Stuart Pearce, like in his first time, and obviously Moyes wanted him back initially. And the board were like sort of against it because he was critical of him in the past. And even when that happened, Stuart Pearce didn't come out and say, oh, you know, the board are terrible, why am I not back? He was like, you know what, hopefully I'll be back soon. Just kept it under wraps sort of thing. Didn't come out and start saying all these terrible things. He thought, you know what, let me be loyal to David White, doing a great job. Hopefully I'll get the phone call again. And it happened. He got the phone call and now he's back. And it's just great to see, because that, like, look at Aaron Cresswell, for example. There's a reason why he's having the best season of his life. He's got 6 assists so far this season. The most he's managed in the season is 7. And if you look at under Bilic, he only managed 4 assists. He only managed 1 assist under Pellegrini. Only 1 assist under Pellegrini. I think I'm right in saying, in Moyes' 2 spells like combined, he's managed a total of 13 assists, which is just remarkable. And Stuart Pearce has been there on both occasions. Stuart Pearce, obviously former left-back, as we all know. Great left-back in his day, I should say. And there's a reason why Aaron Cresswell has been playing well. Alpha Masuaki was playing well, you know, prior to getting injured. Look at someone like Kevin Nolan, the goal-scoring midfielder. Who's a goal-scoring midfielder for West Ham? Thomas Suchek. Look at Declan Rice, making effort to get more goals, taking that penalty against the... Oh, who was against? I forgot the team. But scoring that penalty. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you're seeing the impact they're having behind the scenes, and the players be like, yeah, I need to get more goals, or Cresswell, yeah, I need to get more assists. Like, it's beautiful. I'm really happy to see it.
We talked a lot about Cresswell last week, but, you know, I thought about it afterwards, and I thought about his performance against Tottenham. And I thought, you know, I've said this before, I don't care about England. I don't care if our players get in the England team or not. Don't even feel, you know, I just care about West Ham. And if anything, I just am terrified that players playing for England will get injured or will end up, you know, moving clubs because, you know, they meet too many lads from the other richer clubs or whatever. That said, right, Aaron Cresswell, right, or Chilwell, who's the better player, Shane?
Chilwell can't even get in the Chelsea team right now.
I know. You know, someone, I think, in jest on a West Ham Facebook group I'm a member of, said the other day, is it me or is Cresswell looking like peak era Paolo Maldini, right? Now, there's an Italian West Ham fan on this group who scoffed at that, right? Because obviously Maldini is a god to the Italians. He was literally a footballing god. He looked like a god, right? But, you know, Maldini was one of those players who had the gift of being able to play both at centre-back and at left-back. He was equally good at defending as he was at creating chances in attack. He was also the sort of player that was tough, but you never saw him with dirty shorts, right? He looked immaculate. He was one of those players, and you get a lot of Italian defenders like this, who are able to be strong but elegant at the same time. I tell you what, Cresswell is that player.
Yeah,
I can see. I mean, I'm not saying that. Yeah, you know, I don't think there's ever been a player in that position as good as Paolo Maldini. But I can see a comparison because he is a tough defender. He is really difficult to beat. He will get in with strong challenges. You know, he will do blocks when you think that all else is lost. He can do all that stuff, right? But he's unruffled. You won't see a hair out of place, you know. And when he's not doing all that stuff, he's at the other end creating chances. He's one of our main providers, as you said, of goals. Absolutely incredible. But, Rashane, I mean, look, you know, Cresswell probably wouldn't, despite a performance like that on Sunday, I don't think he would have even made the top 5 of man of the match for West Ham, which says how brilliantly all our players played. Yeah. What did you think? I suppose it's a shame to pick out individual performances, but who would your man of the match have been?
Oh, that is a really good question. That is a really good question. You know, I'll give it to Lingard. I feel like Lingard was just amazing. But Craig Dawson played well, you know. Suchek and Safar, oh my goodness, they're made of steel. I'm convinced they're made of steel. Convinced. Yeah. Suchek was bleeding in the first half. He still wants to play. Oh my, I'm not sure if you saw it, but Safar, I think something was wrong with his ribs when Fabianski came out and punched the ball. Suchek ran out as if
God, you know what, mate. I mean? Well, there's a clip going round, right? Someone's made a beautiful... I mean, of course, after a result like that, you settle down and you think, right, now I'm going to wait for the memes to roll in, right? Because there's going to be some crackers. And there have been, right? I think maybe my favourite was someone just took the music from Titanic, the Celine Dion song from Titanic, and just put that over the clip of Suchek running over. I mean, I've never seen the bloke move so quick, running over to his mate. I mean, I felt it was slightly embarrassing, but they're so lovable. both of them as just such lovable blokes, aren't they? You're right, they're made of steel. They got hearts of gold, mate. They love each other, and it's beautiful to see.
It really is. And listen, when I saw the way Safar landed, I was thinking, oh, I know he's going to come off here. I saw that they're getting ready to bring a stretcher on. I was thinking, oh, no, this looks bad. And then he gets up and runs back on the field. I'm thinking, what on earth is going on here? He's fine after all. And I thought it was nice.
It's all that potato salad, mate.
Oh, honestly,
that's what's doing
honestly. Like, we know what to give for his birthday now, that's for sure. And like, if in the video clip as well, Craig Dawson's like, mate, like, it's fine. It's just his ribs. Like, he's all right.
Like, yeah, he's having to calm him down. Don't worry, he's not dying.
mate.
Now, after the game, like I say, I was so tense, even before the game started. I was tense throughout the first half when I thought we were reasonably comfortable. I was in trouble, mate. I was in trouble mentally, emotionally, and physically in the second half. Big style, right? I was struggling because it's that thing where you felt the prize, the glittering prize, was so close. It was, you could almost taste it. But every second brought more drama, right? And more fear as Tottenham pushed harder and harder and harder. And I didn't know what to do myself. When the game was over, right, the problem was midday kickoff. So I'm like, hang about, it's only 2 o'clock. It's 2 o'clock on a Sunday. The sun was out, right? It was like a spring day outside. And the kids were like, you know, what are we going to do? You know, we can be out playing in the garden. Let's go out for a walk, a socially distanced walk, blah, blah, blah. Right. And I was, do you know what happened to me? Got no pride in admitting this. I was so exhausted that I went upstairs, right? I think I had to change my top because I've been sweating so much, right? And I thought, I'm just going to have a little, I'm an old man, right? I thought, I'm going to have a lie down on the bed here. I feel knackered, right? Wake up, thinking it was 20 minutes later, go downstairs. I said, how long have I been up there for? My wife said, you have been sound asleep for 2 hours. 2 hours. She went, and I'm not surprised, she went, because the state of you during that game was unbelievable. She went, you literally just collapsed from nervous exhaustion at the end and you've been asleep for 2 hours. I woke up at 4 o'clock, mate, because it was just, the thing is, often, you know, during this period, we've been watching games in the evening, 6 o'clock kickoffs, 8 o'clock kickoffs, you win, you got the buzz of victory, right? And then you just think, right, bedtime, just going to get myself to bed and wake up feeling happy, right? Or you play in the afternoon, you're at a stadium, you've got to, you know, you go out afterwards, you meet your mates, you've got to get home and all the rest of it, right? I just had a whole sunny spring afternoon stretching out ahead of me. I did not know how to channel all the emotion. So I just shut myself down, mate. That's all I could do. You were lucky that you had work to do because it gave you something to focus on.
Not at all. I was still nervous. I was still... Listen, in the last 10 minutes, the amount of water I was drinking, that I had to go to the toilet because... it was just too much. It became unbearable. Like, I was sweating as well, jets and sweat by the time I left the stadium, because I was just like in my chair, I kept rocking back and forth in the chair thinking, and then especially when I saw 5 minutes at a time, thinking 5 minutes, come on, like, can't be free. So yeah, I definitely know what you mean. I imagine the listeners would be agreement with us that it was just so intense and unbearable. That's why I uploaded the gif of SpongeBob biting his nose, because that's how I felt.
Yeah, it was madness. Right, we got City next. It's never ending. When you're a top team like us, when you're as massive as West Ham United, then every single weekend is like a cup final, right? We've got City next. But you know what? I find it so much easier because we had a weight of expectation with Tottenham. I think the form City are in, it's fine because no one's expecting anything out of it. I even felt that with that Liverpool game, which was, I feel, the most disappointing performance of the season almost, there was a sense that there was a bit of weight of expectation. Like, everyone was watching and thinking, are West Ham going to prove they're the real deal? Are they going to pull this off? Liverpool are there for the taking. And we blew it, right? We flunked that. But against City are so imperious at the moment. I think it's the first game in a while that we can approach with the sort of underdog spirit that Moyes will be able to really harness, you know? And if we lose that game, no harm done. The other teams around us have probably got to play City. A lot of them have anyway, you know. And so it'll all balance out in the wash at the end of the season. But I don't know, man. I think that I think that we can go out there. We're a nightmare to play against. We're a team that, when we're on form, like, for instance, we were against Palace, that we almost got to that level against Sheffield United, right? Then we're a real handful in attack. But I think when we're not in that kind of exuberant attacking form and we're just having to dig in and make ourselves resilient, it's even worse for the opposition manager because then they can see no cracks. They can't think, well, West Ham are going to fly forward with their attacking players and we'll be able to hit them on the counter. They just think, this bloody West Ham team are a nightmare. They're all going to get behind the ball. They all work for each other. They got Rice and Tuchek. It's like playing against four men when it's only two of them in the centre of the field. They've got these incredible centre-backs. They've got brilliant full-backs. They've got an amazing keeper. They are an absolute nightmare. I think City are going to find it tough against us, aren't they?
Hopefully that's what Pep Guardiola will say come 2:30 on Saturday. That would be great if we were to compliment West Ham like that. And you know what? I feel like we're a better team from the 1-1 draw against Man City. I feel like we've improved.
But the problem is City are too, aren't they?
Yeah, that's the problem City have as well. Listen, I'll be happy with a draw. I think a draw would be a good result. I'll be definitely happy with that. And you know what? Even if West Ham were to lose, it wouldn't be the end of the world. We all know Man City right now is ridiculous form. They're just streets above everyone else right now. So a draw wouldn't be the end of the world. But I'm hoping we go into that match just full of confidence, feeling, you know what, we can win. Like, prior to, before every match, I always put out a poll on Twitter, like, you know, West Ham fans, what's your prediction for this match? You know, how do you think the players will do? And ahead of Tottenham, I think I'm right in saying, like, the vast majority said a win. And I reckon fans will be relatively confident against Man City. I reckon fans will be, so.
I think that, you know, look, City will be the favourites, and rightly so. They're extremely hard to play against at the moment. They're in an incredible rich vein of form. But the only team since the turn of the year that are on form anywhere near as good as theirs is us, right? And I just sort of think this is the sort of game that Moyes and the coaching team relish because they think we've got nothing to lose and we're just going to make it tough. And I think that Moyes' game plan will be, let's see if we can nick this 1-0. And there's no reason why we shouldn't. I think that it's not the most likely outcome. I think probably the most likely outcome is the City win. But I can absolutely envisage us just making ourselves tough to play against. And with the attacking players we've got, particularly Lingard and Antonio, on the break, we could be an absolute nightmare and just nick this one. And then after that, well, there's nothing much else to fear once we've got through that, is there?
After that, it's what? Leeds United beat Leeds United. One of the best performances of the season, in my opinion. We played so great at Elland Road. So, could definitely get a result there. After that, Man United. Listen, Man United beat us twice already this season, but we can definitely get a victory.
We owe them, you know. We owe them because I felt that there was long periods in both games that we were better than them, particularly in the league, right? I thought the cup game, both teams were pretty lacklustre. But I think, particularly in the league, we were unlucky that day. And I think we owe them this season because I actually think that we're at least as good as United this season. And we deserve a victory in that. And I think we might get it.
I agree. And after that, it's Arsenal. Arsenal are so...
Nah, the Gooners, I mean...
They're so lucky to beat us in that
2-1. They're a joke club, aren't they?
Of course. Let me check the table, in fact. We are 11 points ahead of Arsenal right now.
I mean, 11 points ahead of Arsenal. Small-time
We are massive,
club.
Sam. Exactly.
Yeah, we are so massive. Big. It's unbelievable. I mean, you know, well, we've got more fans, haven't we? And we've always known that. We got better fans. We've always known that. And now we've got a vastly superior team. I mean, Arsenal. So we'll beat Arsenal. I mean, you look forward, you sort of think, well, Wolves, we battered them earlier in the season and we've improved since then. Then we've got Leicester. Well, we battered them at their place earlier in the season. Although I would say that Leicester now are a more formidable opposition. Not to waste time praising another club, but I will say this about Leicester City, right? Everyone, at the moment, we're the story. At the moment, West Ham are the club that everyone in football is talking about, saying, oh, look, isn't it amazing what they've done? They've overachieved. They've broken up the big boys. But I would say that, yeah, of course, Leicester did win the league not that long ago, right? And they finished, did they finish fourth or fifth last season? I can't remember. You know, so you know, it's not like they're completely out of the blue. But I would say, in a way, West Ham's success has overshadowed the fact that Leicester have been in the top three for the vast majority of the season. You know, they've been doing very well. And I would say they don't have you know, they're not a poor club, but they don't have the same spending power as Manchester United or Manchester City or Liverpool, right? And so I'm not here to sort of, this is, I'm sure there's several other Leicester City podcasts you could listen to, and I'm happy for West Ham to get praise. But I think, bloody hell, West Ham Leicester City is a top of the table clash on the 10th of April. Mad. Absolute madness.
It really is, and obviously we will win that.
Listen, mate. Right, Rashane, serious, real talk now. Where are you looking at in the fixtures between now and the 23rd of May? Where do you think we're dropping points?
I think, let's say, if West Ham can overcome the next, four or five matches and pick up some really good points, I reckon between like Newcastle and Everton, that's where we could potentially drop points because the pressure will be getting to the players. Because it's such a unique position that we find ourselves in, I think then we could drop points. The fact that, you know what, we're so close to finishing the top four, like we're not used to this. What's going to happen? I think that's where West Ham could drop points, in my opinion. What do you think?
Yeah, so you're looking at it from a psychological point of view as opposed to which teams do you think can take points from us?
Yeah.
I mean, I think obviously City and United are the teams that could. I'm joking about Arsenal, but Arsenal have shown signs of a bit of a resurgence recently. So, and I suppose historically, you know, like Arsenal usually get the better of West Ham, so it's really hard to look at that completely objectively just based on form. So that makes me a bit nervous. And obviously Leicester, Chelsea are a bit resurgent. But the thing is, what I know is that if we play at our best, if we play at our best and how we've been playing for several weeks now, then we will finish in the top four. We just will, barring a big injury. And that means barring an injury to Declan Rice or Thomas Suchet. Because even in other positions, I would have said Ogbonna, right? But Ogbonna's out. And the centre-backs we've got, the strength in depth we've got in that position is unbelievable, you know. I think barring, we've lost, and people say, oh, you know, you can't sell Haller. What if Antonio gets injured? Well, Antonio was injured and we still, you know, we played without a striker and thrashed Sheffield United. So I think that it would have to take... I think central midfield is the area that I'd be worried about. If either of those lads got a big injury, then I'd be worried. But other than that, I just think it would have to take a pretty big crisis in confidence to come from somewhere. And I can't see it happening.
And you know
for
what?
Us there's to lose too many of these games we've got left.
There's something we haven't mentioned yet. Fans will be back for the last game against Southampton. Obviously, we heard what Dave Johnson said yesterday about the whole, you know, how he plans to ease lockdown. So fans will be back for Southampton game. Listen, I'm always speaking on the fact that West Ham are still in the top four, but if we keep up the good run of form, keep winning games, we could have the biggest party for that Southampton game. Like, can you imagine? Oh my goodness, I'll lose all composure. I don't even know how I'd react.
And you're renowned for your composure, mate. You have maintained the good reputation of the Athletic through thick and thin. In the press box, right? You are synonymous with the word professional. But I see you, right, with one of those beer hats with the straws coming out of them, right? On top of a burning car in Stratford, right? Singing Knees Up Mother Brown, right? At 2 a.m. in the morning, right? Surrounded with Danny Dyer and Ray Winston beside you. Yeah, these are the sort of scenes people are going to see. I will be on horseback. I'll have mounted a police horse and gone rogue, right? Naked, my whole body painted in claret and blue, singing, "We're all going on a European tour." It's going to be sensational. And I'm going to say to everyone listening, everything's on the table that day. As long as we're not bothering anyone else or breaking the law, even breaking the law to a small degree, I think is fair enough, right? If that day comes against Southampton, post-lockdown, West Ham are qualified for the Champions League, all bets are off, lads. We can just absolutely lose it, right? That's fair, isn't it?
Of course, of course. That would be so good. Like, I'm not sure. Like, sometimes I watch, like, videos on YouTube of, like, dogs getting so excited when they see the owners.
Do you, mate? What, you just do that to relax sometimes?
Yeah, you know, sometimes. Yeah. Let me just see your dog react.
Yeah, it's really nice. I've seen videos like that. It's lovely.
I mean, let's pass out because they get so excited.
That's more or less what I did. I just passed out, mate. We beat Spurs, went fourth, and I just passed out for 2 hours. It's bloody worrying. Better go and get some tests. Oh, well. If I go, I go, you know, and if it's as West Ham, you know, into the Champions, the thing, we'll get into this next week. If we get into Europe, mate, I mean, you'll be at the expense of the Athletic flying around, right, to the Nou Camp, to the Bernabeu, to the San Siro, to all these places, watching West Ham play in the Champions League. You're going to be on a sensational European tour next year, hopefully, mate.
I've already started looking at flights on British Airways, EasyJet. I'm just trying to get in that mindset.
Do you have to book your own flights, or does the Athletic have an in-house head of travel and logistics?
The latter part, an in-house head of logistics. So we're covered. We're completely covered. Nice hotels, now, you name it.
Do you think there'll be an appetite for some Athletic podcast hosts to be out at some of these games reporting live from a lovely European city? I don't know, perhaps in a piazza, sipping a nice coffee. You know, like James Richardson used to do on Football Italia in the 90s. I'm sort of visualising us in a nice town square somewhere in Florence. Do you know what I mean, Rishi?
I can picture it now.
Don't just picture it, mate. Go and pitch it to the bosses there. Say, listen, I think we should get Delaney involved in this European tour business.
Yeah, can you imagine somewhere nice and sunny with your flip-flops and your shorts and the sunglasses?
Be absolutely amazing with my sombrero on the lot. Oh, well, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Perhaps we'll look more into a potential West Ham European tour over the coming weeks. Let's leave it there. Let's hope that we can get some sort of result against City and then onwards and upwards. What a time to be alive, right? And what a time to be part of the wonderful West Ham family. Rishane, thanks as always. What are we looking forward to? Something on the coaching team this week on the site?
Should be posting a piece on Moyes on what he got up to during his 19 months when he's out of work. Obviously, he's talking about like visiting Red Bull and, you know, trying to like tap into their sort of model. So yeah, I'm looking to speak to a few people at Red Bull just to get an insight into what they did with David Moyes and how it benefited him. So that, and another piece of my colleague Tom Warville on like West Ham's chances of finishing the top four. So we're the two pieces to look out for this week.
Brilliant. All right, you can follow me at Delaney Man on Twitter. You can follow Rishane at Rishane Sport. Subscribe to The Athletic so you can get Rishane's fantastic writing on West Ham in your inbox all through the week. Until next time, come on, you Irons. And remember, ladies and gents, there's only one. Samassiabu!
The Athletic.